This is Belonging, a podcast that explores being alive in the age of loneliness. I'm your host, Becca Piastrelli, a writer, mother, and community tender currently living on the ancestral lands of the Coast Miwok people in present-day Marin County, California. In this show, we explore topics like rites of passage, cultivating meaningful community, seasonal and cyclical living, and what it means to be a good ancestor in these times. I have thought-provoking conversations with friends, teachers, elders, and ancestral medicine keepers to help support you in bringing more meaning and connection to your life. I also pop in here and there to share updates and learnings from my own story, because we were meant to do this together, cosmically holding hands as we walk the spiral of life. You can expect to be challenged by new or old ideas, face your beliefs and what systems informed them, get curious and brave to tell the truth about the deeper, harder things, and feel comforted in the knowing that you don't have to navigate it all alone. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Belonging, the podcast. It's Becca Piastrelli here with you to share an episode that very much came from a personal desire, from my own story of what's happening in my life, which is, if you are new around here or haven't heard lately, Tim, my partner, and I purchased a 56-acre farm in the Hudson Valley of New York here in the States. And we are planning on relocating our entire family there, our entire family of three, and really shifting the way we live our life to be farm aligned, land aligned, and in a different, completely different climate and bioregion. And I'm very much in the liminal process. We're moving really slow to get there, and you'll learn more why when you listen to this episode, or if you listen to past episodes. Like the one with Hillary Maddox, episode 110, Slow Homesteading and Land Stewardship with Hillary Maddox. I've been wanting to chat with people who have done it about the process. And I just know that there are some of you out there who are curious about this process, whether or not you actually want to do it or not, like what it takes to move to the country. Or if you're dreaming of purchasing land or relocating to a tiny town far from city life or creating a community structure in some way, like this has been my curiosity. So I invited on Alyssa Hessler, who is an author of a book called Ditch the City, Go Country. And she is the host of the Urban Exodus podcast, which I personally have been binging and taking notes on because she, for many years, even pre-pandemic, has been talking to people who have made that move and how they did it and why they did it and how they're actually real deal making it work. So I was like, hey, can you come share what you know about that? And she's a former corporate tech employee, which is definitely my story and my partner's story, who left the big city of Seattle and she moved to a rural community in Maine for love for her husband and partner. And now she's momming and doing the whole thing. So in this episode, we discuss common reasons people choose to leave cities, the importance of being as prepared as possible before moving, and some things to expect if you're thinking of relocating. And we also unpack how the idealized country life, the romanticized cottagecore thing we see on Instagram, is actually damaging rural communities. And we emphasize the importance of seeking out the communities we enter, even when it feels uncomfortable, and honoring the histories of the lands we inhabit. So this is like the most sneak peek I'm giving you into what's happening for me. I get a lot of questions and I'm pretty protective of it, particularly on Instagram, because it's happening in real time. And yeah, some people share opinions that I'm not open to. But this is the process. I'm sharing more about the process of buying land and how this land came to us and the missteps we took and the near misses, almost moved somewhere that we didn't. And then stuff I'm sharing about in the process is only here on the podcast, nowhere else. So you'll hear Alyssa actively giving me tips on everything from like being a good neighbor to navigating ideological difference to how we respond to the climate migration and land grabs that are happening, the gentrification of these small communities, the realities of privilege and money and what it takes to actually like purchase land and build a home and all of these things. So this is an episode for people who are dreaming of buying land or curious about it. I share it with you in hopes that it is of service to you. And let's pop into this conversation with Alyssa Hessler of the Urban Exodus podcast. Alyssa Hessler, welcome to Belonging. Thank you for agreeing to chat with me. I know that you're usually on the other side of the microphone, so it's so nice to chat with you and hear what you have to say about your expertise with ditching the city.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for folks who might not know about the Urban Exodus podcast and the Ditch the City book, maybe you can share a bit about you and your work. I know your work is vast and varied, but as it relates to this curiosity that so many of us have around like going back to the land.
Yeah. So I started photographing for the project in 2012, and I had made a move from Seattle, Washington to Maine, and it was a challenging move. It was something that I had always dreamed of and was like saving up for the future to someday be able to break my ties with corporate America and like farm and live a different type of life. But it felt like I didn't know when I was going to have enough to feel secure in that decision. And I met my husband in New York at a party, and I was there for work. And the day I met him was the day he signed his mortgage in Maine. And he's from Maine. And so he was moving home, and it was love at first sight. Like, that's all I can really say about it. I'm not a particularly romantic person and never really believed in that until it happened to me. But we did 5 months long distance, and Maine to Seattle is very far. And so I just decided, like, I'm going to try this life out. And it was really hard for me, even though I felt like this was the dream that I had had in the back of my mind forever. Making that transition was really challenging. And then I wanted to learn from people, and I looked online, and all I could find really online were these really bucolic stories of people making these big life shifts and everything so gravy and wonderful and perfect. And it didn't feel truthful or authentic to me. And so I decided that I would just start photographing and finding stories of people who had made that transition and learning from them, and then maybe putting them online so that I could speak to the person that I was when I was working in corporate America, feeling like I was trapped where I was and I didn't have any pathways out of there. And so I started that way. And then I did like a road trip in 2015, and I photographed stories all across the country. And I've just like continually been photographing stories. I probably have, I don't know, maybe over 200 stories on the website now. And they're from all over the world at this point. And I've just learned so much from the people that I've met through this work and have built a community that goes beyond my community where I live now, which was kind of important to me because my community is so much smaller here. And it's just opened my perspective to just so many other, it just opened my perspectives, because hearing people's stories and seeing where they're coming from, it shifts the way that you look at the world. And so then I started a podcast in 2020 because I couldn't travel anymore to go and photograph stories. And that was really revelatory, because to have people be able to tell their stories in their own words was so powerful. And I could never write somebody's story better than they could tell it. That's where I'm at now. And I'm working on making a documentary series that actually transports people to the places where people are and introduces them to rural communities. And there just aren't enough narratives in rural communities. I think there's a lot of archetypes that we see in media about rural America, and I'd like to really challenge those.
Yeah. What are some of those archetypes?
I mean, there's like the bucolic fresh eggs collecting, you know, like Instagram curated version of country living, which really doesn't touch on how difficult it is to make a living, how isolating it can be, how it just doesn't tell the truth because it's really hard work. I also think a lot of the archetypes don't really respect the value in learning by doing and the intelligence that comes from things that like we might classify as more blue collar versus white collar work. And there's so many different layers of it. The people that I've met have challenged some of my own stereotypes that I had. And we are living in a time where media is very intentionally trying to separate us from one another. And I think that that plays out a lot in rural America. And I just want to challenge that because I think that everybody's values are the same. And when you look at the end of the day, like people want to live a life where they feel secure and they aren't worried about where their food's going to come from, if they have heat, and they want to have community and they want to just live a happy, autonomous life. So yeah, I think that the project's taught me a lot of things in that capacity.
Yeah, totally. So I'm going to be interjecting with my own story throughout all of this. Well, Hillary Maddox, who's a podcast guest who shared about going from living in Seattle and working in tech, which is very much the story of me and my partner, and buying land and starting homestead there. She was the one who was like, you got to listen to the Urban Exodus. And then I like won one of your giveaways and you sent me Dahlia tubers. And I was like, oh my gosh, so amazing. Anyways, all of this is to say, people who are listening know, have listened for a while, know that my partner Tim and I purchased a 56-acre former dairy farm. We bought it from a weekender who came up from New York City. It was called a gentleman's hobby farm. And we have had to contend with this feeling of like the out-of-town or California city folk coming into this small rural town and facing the stereotypes of us and then facing the stereotypes of what, like, even if it's not like fully, like we would never admit to it, like that is culturally imprinted by media, by pop culture, by classism, you know? And so we're in that dance right now. I was just out there a few weeks ago and had to have a conversation with the neighbor introducing myself. I brought chicken eggs from the chickens and I was like, hi, we're not out here yet. I'm sure you have some preconceived notions about this couple from San Francisco coming out here. And I just want to say, like, you can ask me any questions. We're here to learn, like all this stuff. And they said to me, oh yeah, we've been judging a lot. And I thought, okay, at least we can just tell the truth about that. So I can understand that over the years, you talking to all these different people who have had very different variations of what this story is, which is ditching the city and going out and buying land and trying to make a living that way, what that has brought up and what that has taught you, that it's actually not just like a linear path.
Absolutely. And there is culture clash between people that are coming from cities into rural communities. It's very similar to urban areas getting gentrified and people being displaced. There's a real fear of change in our society that goes very deep, and it's in all facets of society. And there is an enormous influx of people who are considering leaving cities and wanting to move to rural places. And the realities of that are that there are a lot of rural places that all of a sudden are no longer affordable for people who've lived there for generations. And so it's just like really recognizing and viewing the landscape and coming in as humble as possible. And I think that you going and meeting your neighbors and, you know, just being straightforward and trying to have conversations, that is the bridge. And coming from a place of respect of their knowledge, because they know that area better than anyone. And I think that I made a lot of these mistakes kind of early on when I moved, because it's kind of ingrained in the corporate world. And like, I worked in corporate tech in Seattle, just the same as Hillary. We were like very similar pathways. And when I moved here, it was so hard to kind of detach from thinking that the way that I did things was the most efficient, fastest, best way. And I would just say that when you are in this, just ask for help from people and listen to that advice as much as possible. And but also be willing to experiment. You know, there are things that get set in stone. Like, this is the way that we do things. And there's someone that I interviewed from New Zealand who they left Sydney and they moved to New Zealand to become ranchers. And they realized that listening to the ways that they did ranching actually wasn't going to work for their model. And so they listened and they tried to meet people where they were at and they tried to be respectful. But then they also were like, all right, we're going to figure out how this works for us. And so I think it's a little bit of a dance. But, you know, where I live in Maine, and the state of Maine is one of the oldest states, there are a lot of rural places where young people have left for job opportunities outside. And so I do think that if you come in from a place of respect, of respecting the culture, respecting the people that have been there before, and not this like, I'm going to save or change this town, and you work hard, people really respect people who are working hard at whatever it is their vision is, then you will find common ground and you will build community wherever you replant yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think something that feels like an edge for me, a place of discomfort, particularly in this era and time, particularly 2020 and on, is having in-person conversations with people that could potentially hold tension. And I think what I'm realizing is to embed yourself in physical community that is rural, where everyone talks, right? That there has to be a willingness to like knock on a door or like meet someone in town or like even talk on the phone. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a millennial. You know, it's like, whoa. But the whole story doesn't need to be shared. But there was a moment of tension with these neighbors, which is why I had to go over and talk to them. And I have to say, the first inclination I had was to like email them or like not deal with it or like lean into a place of like conflict avoidance or like passiveness. And it just took like a 30-minute tea and a gift of eggs and a frank chat and looking outside their window and seeing like, oh, the pasture's here, because there was a conversation about removing of hedges. And I just think, wow, I can't speak for everyone, but I know a lot of people relate to that feeling of like, wow, it's actually like an atrophied muscle to be relational with other beings, either in person or in real time.
Well, I mean, COVID really allowed us in some ways to silo ourselves even more so into our comforts and the people that, you know, it's just like, choose your pod. And so coming out of COVID and having to relate and interact with people that, you know, you might not see eye to eye, you might not see politically eye to eye, you might not have the same religious or ideological beliefs, but they are the people that surround you. And they are people that you're going to see at the grocery store, you're going to see them forever. So avoidance is really tricky. And I will say that, you know, it doesn't always work that way. Like, I know people who've had conflicts with neighbors, with right-of-ways and things like that. And, you know, they can last for a really long period of time, but you just have to do your due diligence to try to be the best person that you can be in that situation. And if they aren't willing to meet you in the middle, then so be it. But yeah, I think that overcoming those fears and just sitting down and meeting them where they're at is the best way to solve things when you're living outside of a city. I mean, we become such a litigious country, and in a city you can really avoid. Like if you have an issue with a neighbor or something, you can kind of just avoid it or like send a letter from a lawyer or something. And then you don't really have to interact with that person. Like the amount of times you're going to see them is very limited. But if you're replanting yourself into a community, like everybody talks to, you know, like you would be surprised, like probably everybody knows everything about you guys and what you're up to and that you're coming there before you even get there, you know, and that can feel a little disorienting. And I think the lack of anonymity that I had when I first moved here was really intense. I'm not like a secretive person, but I'm not used to people like thinking that they know everything about me or my story. And so the faster you meet people and the more you're just like, this is who I am, then the more you can feel like you're controlling that narrative and it isn't other people just making assumptions.
I got ahead of myself because I was really, I'm always interested in like how we as humans navigate conflict. But one of my first questions I wanted to ask you is, you've had, like you said, over 200 people you've photographed and conversations you've had, you yourself has made the shift. I'm wondering what some common threads, like common themes are for why people want to leave the city and go move to rural areas and sort of shift their pace of life. Like, what are the main reasons why people are doing this? Because I've got my own and I'd love to hear yours, but I'd also love to hear what the themes are.
Well, mine was for love, although I would say that if I felt like I had saved up enough money, I would have done it because I just wanted to live more connected to nature. I would say that that's number one, a big piece. In the city, we're living in these man-made worlds where everything is both like privatized and convenienced for our comforts, and we have lost a lot of the skills that even like one or two generations ago, everybody had. And there's this real feeling of wanting to reclaim those skills because we are living in a very uncertain and quite frankly, a bit of a frightening time in society. And I think with COVID and, you know, with global warming and intensity of superstorms. I mean, like when Hurricane Sandy hit New York City and the streets were filled with water and, you know, apartment buildings were without power for a week at a time, you really start to think, gosh, I'm living in this place with millions of other people and I don't know how to do anything for myself. And I don't even know how to provide my own basic human needs like food, water, etc. And so I think that that's a motivator for some people. I wouldn't say it's like prepper mentality, but it's more a, I want to live a life that feels more connected and rooted in a place where I can better take care of my day-to-day needs. Another big one is having children and wanting to raise them more connected to nature as well. I've seen a lot of young parents, new parents, make this transition specifically for their kids. Another is people returning to places where they grew up. I think that there's still this narrative that like staying in your hometown, if you grew up in a small town, is like failing or something. Like you just, oh, well, you stayed, you know? And I grew up in a small town and I think that I had some of that as well. Like I have to get out of here and I have to make something of myself, you know? And this idea of getting to the city and seeing what that looks like and like what is making yourself, what is success, and kind of reinterpreting what success is and realizing that that can be where you grew up in a place that feels like home. And so that's another key one. And I think that like community and reconnection with self are also really big because you can build community in cities. It's absolutely possible. There are some cities that, you know, certain boroughs or parts of town can really feel like, you know, everyone on your block and everybody communicates with one another, but it's less so these days than maybe it was even 10, 20 years ago. And anybody that you kind of talk to will say that. And so when you're living in a small town, there still is that essence of community. I can't go downtown. I can't go to the grocery store without running into at least like 3 to 4 people that I know. And I love that. And I think that people really yearn for that and are missing it, especially going through COVID and maybe feeling particularly isolated. And just that communication with self, having room in your mind and your physical space to think, to be creative, to make things happen. Your time in cities really isn't your own. There are so many encumbrances on your time. You are stuck in traffic commuting. You are in lines at the grocery store. Like you just all of a sudden have so much more time. And I've heard this over and over again from people that I've interviewed It's time is our most valuable resource, and it's the thing that capitalism separates us from. And so this is like grabbing back and taking back hold of our most valuable personal resource, which is time.
Yeah. Wow. I resonate with all of that. As someone who's in the process of making the move, I also am so aware of how much I'm romanticizing, like what it will mean for me, which I'm sure is a common thing, particularly because like if you go on like Instagram or TikTok and like, I don't know where, if you are on those things or even if you have like algorithms feeding those things. But for me, it's like cottagecore, you know, like prairie dresses and wire baskets full of eggs. I'm into it. And then it's like, you know, like walking through fields of wheat, like lovingly touching it. I'm like, I'm into it. And then it's like having all your food brought in and chopped firewood for the winter. I'm into it. Oh, and then a lot of like young mothers, you know, I'm a mother of a 2.5-year-old, or I should say early mothers. I don't think I actually qualify as a young mother at all, but that sense of we had our child Atlas and it just lit something in my partner and I. Also, we had her in 2020. So we also felt like kind of a little traumatized from that, lowercase t traumatized. And we had this like just yearning of like, what if we all just like lived on the land where we all shared childcare instead of us doing it by ourselves and we like had communal meals? And like that could happen in a city, that could happen in suburbia. But like the vision, right, was like fields of rolling weed and like orchard days and all these things. And then thinking of movies and film and pop culture and all of this is like totally, I believe, legitimate in feeding the yearning. But what it also does is it creates a romanticizing of like how much work it'll be and like what it means you say goodbye to. I feel like I'm in this grief stage that I'm sure will, it's like a pre-grief of like, I live in the Bay Area, California right now. It's like, I can get anything like that. Like, I got the most insane smoothie yesterday, March 1st, and it's been like wintry here. I got the most insane smoothie with like so many like exotic flavors in it, and it was like $20. And like all I thought when I drink it was like, well, this is going to be the last time I ever drink a smoothie like this. Like my life is about to really change. And I don't know if I'm wise or not to be anticipating of that. I guess this is leading me to the question around, you're talking to people that are on the other side of the migration. And I guess a lot of the interviews I've read and heard like are a few years down the line. And I'm wondering what the themes are about what was really hard or what was really uncomfortable or what was like just like straight up they did not anticipate being a difficult thing to move through, and also for you as well.
Okay, so lack of anonymity is really top on the list. I think that that is a hard thing for people to get used to, especially if you're used to just like moving through the world and not encountering people over and over again throughout your day. Just the sheer volume of work required. And I'm not even talking if you're farming. Like, I'm just talking like you're a homeowner in a rural place where there is snow or even just extreme weather events. Like, I spend so much time prepping every single season for the next season, you know, like just making sure the trees don't fall down and like moving brush and like just there's just so much physical labor required. If you own any amount of land, that can be an acre of land, that can be 200 acres of land. There's just a lot of labor. And I think that people don't necessarily anticipate that. I also think the cost of living, people will think that, oh, it's going to be so much cheaper because, you know, I'm used to paying for $20 smoothies, you know, but like, you know, it costs a lot of money to heat your house and the grocery store, like specialty items that you might be used to getting, your grocery store won't have it. And so there are just going to be a lot of shifts. Like there aren't going to be very many restaurants or things to go out and eat. Like that was hard for me because my favorite food is Vietnamese food. And like the closest Vietnamese restaurant is an hour and 15 minutes away. And it's pretty good, but it's not like Seattle good. And I had to learn how to cook a lot of the things that I missed eating, because when I was living in the city, it was almost cheaper for me to go out as a single woman than it was to cook for myself, which is kind of weird, but to a certain degree that was true. I would just like go around and, you know, get my bowl of soup and then go home and eat it for two meals. And so I think that cost of living was a shock to people. Also, just like, it's hard to build community and make friends, especially when you're older. You know, maybe you aren't moving there for work. Maybe you are working from home. That's really hard. Like if you're moving in a telecommuting job, you have to be super intentional about making friends and building community. And you're lucky that you have a young daughter, because children are like an ambassador when you move. Like you will just meet other people just because you have a child. And I would say, like, get your child into the local daycare and get them into, you know, play groups and things like that, because that's going to be the easiest way that you meet other people. The other thing that I think wasn't necessarily hard, but it was kind of just a reprogramming, is you're going to end up having friends of all ages when you live in a rural place. And I think that when most people, when they live in a city, it's very homogenized. You will be friends with people who are all about the same age as you, all about the same income bracket, usually working in the same fields. And when you live in the country, like, there aren't going to be people that do what you do necessarily, you know? And so you're going to have friends from all different walks of life, all different ages. And at first that might be like a little bit weird, but it does make life significantly more richer and just like lean into it. So I would say that those are some of the hardest things that people weren't expecting. Also, if you're building a business in a rural place, that can be really challenging as well. If you are starting a farm, super hard. Infrastructure costs are really expensive. It takes usually 3 years at least to figure out what your market is, what you're good at growing, how you get that to market in different ways. And so a lot of people don't have the revenue to really sustain that for 3 years. So I think that's something that people don't necessarily go into thinking that will be an obstacle. And if you're building a business in a small town, or moving a business to a small town, really thinking about ways that you can diversify your offerings to make it more inclusive. So like if people in your local area can actually afford the wares that you're selling, or create different items so that anybody that lives in that area can also feel like they can shop at your place. I've seen that happen quite a bit, of like people coming from the city and making shops and everything in it. Everyone's like, who could afford this? Like, it's not that the items aren't good. It's just that they aren't really reading the room and knowing what will work and fit, and really diversifying whatever it is that you're offering so that people in your local community can feel seen and can feel like they can be a patron of your wares as well.
Yeah, that's so interesting. This morning, I like caught wind of a video making the rounds of these two girls, I think just like north of New York, which is the area I'm moving to, of New York City, coming home to see that all these shops have opened up in their quote, like quaint little weekender town with these, like, I don't know, they were going around to all these clothing items and turning over the price tag. And it was like $1,100 for like a coat or whatever in their, like, you know, a small town that sort of kept its small town feel, and just being like, do you see what's happening? And I was like, I do see that. And I wonder if there is a trend happening, particularly with COVID, that happened, that more people are realizing they can work from anywhere, that creates this gentrification effect of shifting communities. I mean, urban, certainly, and also rural. This whole concept of financial accessibility is something that's really like on my heart, because I've shared that we've bought land, and then I know I would be curious too, like, how does one do that, right? Like, there's this whole idea of like that dream of going to the country feels financially inaccessible. And I'm wondering, there's so many ways to do it. And I'm wondering if there's anything you can share around what you've discovered, because you've talked to so many different kinds of people with so many different financial pictures, and they've done it in so many different ways. So I'm curious about what you know.
So when I first started the project, it was kind of just word of mouth, and it was just reaching out to people that I found online. And I started to notice kind of a reoccurring theme of people with privilege and safety nets being able to make that move. And so I very intentionally sought stories that weren't that, because I really wanted to speak to who I was before I met my husband. Like, my husband had already bought this house. So like, I was offered a safety net really for the first time in my life to make a big leap of faith. And if I wouldn't have had that, I don't think I would have made the change. And so for me, it was very important that I found stories of people who came from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, all different types of jobs, that were able to make that move. Because one thing that I continually heard from people is, oh, you're living my dream life, but I could never do that. And so I will say that it is absolutely 100% possible for anybody to make this shift. I've seen people who had zero money in savings make this transition and have been successful at it. I will say that it is not easy at all. And it does require a lot of planning, especially if you are currently living paycheck to paycheck. But I have met people who have lived paycheck to paycheck, put a saving strategy in place, and were able to make it happen. I've also met people who moved to the country and started like woofing and working on farms, and then were able to acquire land through people that they met who saw that they wanted the same type of life that they had and sold them a couple of acres of land. I've met people who have crowdfunded to build tiny off-grid houses and have lived in those houses until they were able to gain financial footings in their businesses to expand and build beyond that. And so it is absolutely possible, but it does require a tremendous amount of both commitment, vision, and pre-planning in order to do it. And so I would say that the reason that we see the stories of privilege is that those are the easiest stories to tell, because they are abundant. And, oh, okay, even though I felt like I didn't really have a financial safety net, I was still working in tech and I was still making a good salary. And quite honestly, I could have moved. I definitely could have. I was just scared. I had a scarcity mindset. So you have to shift that mindset of scarcity, and you have to like really ask yourself, what is it that I want in my life? What steps do I need to take to get there? And so, you know, some people who've made that transition, I have one person that comes to mind in particular. He bought land for sale by owner and is on a payment plan. And so it's raw land, and he's still living and working in the city while they slowly build out their land. And it's going to be a slow build. It's probably going to be 10 years until they get on that land, but they were able to secure the land, and they were able to secure the land before COVID, when prices went up on land. Like, prices for land, raw land all over the country have significantly gone up since COVID. And there are huge land grabs. Like, Bill Gates owns most of the farmland in the United States, and that's absolutely terrifying to me. And so what I would say to people who are like, I want to get on land, is like, you can find land, figure out how you get that land, and then you can work towards it. And like, sometimes buying the land itself is the cheapest piece of it. Because like, if you're buying raw land, you're going to need to build the infrastructure there. And also just doing a ton of research, like, what's the community that you want to live in? Like, what is the landscape that you want to live in? Is there water access there? Do you need to have a hospital close by? Are schools important to you? Do you have kids? Like, you have to ask yourself so many different questions about like, what is it that I really want, to narrow in on an area, to figure out what that area is, to figure out like what land's available and what it costs, and then put a plan in place to get there. But I will say that, you know, I've seen people do it who had no money starting out and are working towards their dream, but it takes longer.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. There are also like programs that like states have to get more people moving to their states. I know Vermont has one. I've seen one in Illinois. I've seen one in Ohio, because that's what we were interested in for a while. But yeah, I'd say my partner, I've been looking for like 5 years for the place. And then we thought it was Vermont, and we went in October 2021, and the prices of land and then to build, because then there was a whole issue with the supply chain around, I remember, timber and steel. It was like, bless my realtor. She just like sat me down and said, here's the numbers. I think you should wait until this chills, or not do this here. And I was like, yeah.
It's like $600 a square foot to build now in Maine, at least. And you are waiting forever for subcontractors. There just aren't, there are a lot of people moving to rural areas, a lot of people building homes. There is a climate migration in place in the United States happening right now. And rural areas can't keep up with that. Like, there are only so many contractors, there are only so many plumbers, there are only so many electricians. And there have been teams of people hired in from major metropolitan areas coming up to build houses in Maine. And that's happening in Vermont as well. It's happening in New York. It's happening all over. And so, you know, my advice for people, if you want to build a house someday, like, you could put your roots down with land and then you don't have to immediately like build the house there. You can work baby steps towards it. Or I've told this to a few friends who are looking for properties and have been looking for properties for a very long time. Cause also in Maine during COVID, like, there would be bidding wars, all cash offers. Like, all of my friends who live and work here and have been here for a long time saving, they couldn't afford it. And prices like doubled pretty much. And so a couple of my friends have like looked at, you know, manufactured homes that are on land that already have the infrastructures built, like they already have a well dug or they already have septic. And those are really big things right off the bat. It's like $100,000 just right off the bat, just to set up those two things before you can even start building. And so you have to do a lot of research and pre-planning. I know people who have moved just because they saw a beautiful house that they fell in love with on Zillow. And a lot of them have regretted that choice because they like find out, oh, you know, we had a baby and now the closest daycare is a 45-minute drive through the snow, or, oh, this house, like, everything was wrong with it. And we didn't do our due diligence to really get an in-depth home inspection. And now we'll forever be making major systems improvements on this house. And so the more you plan, the better off you will be.
Yeah. So we bought a house from 1860, and I would say we are in the category of, oops, so much work to do on it. And yeah, there's a whole story there that I'll save for another time. But that is also one of the reasons why we're taking like a year and a half to get there. Because ultimately, because of the timing of things, and I very much felt like ready. And at the time I was ready, building a home was cost prohibitive, and like, yeah, 2-3 year lead times for labor and materials, that we bought this old farm. And yeah, it's still a long lead time because we're rebuilding a fireplace and we had asbestos and all these other things that are happening. So yeah, I'm just trying to like trust the process. But yeah, in retrospect, I probably would have done more research.
I mean, we've been in our house for 10 years now. We have pretty much replaced nearly every system at this point. Our well pump went, our furnace went. We had like a rock wall on the backside of our house. It collapsed. And it's all the stuff that's not fun and really expensive. But again, like, I didn't choose this house, but I'm so glad that we're here now. Like, this really does feel like home. And you know, it is definitely a major pain in the butt to constantly be, you know, tending to the needs of an old house. But the history of this house is so beautiful, and I just love to be able to carry that on. And I would say that's important too in your community. Like, our house is the old Howe family homestead, and it was here before our town was even a town. And people, when we first moved here, they brought us pictures of the former owner, and it's really special. There was like a book that someone did, a photo essay book about him, and he was just a really wonderful person. And so there's something really incredible about carrying on that legacy and respecting that legacy. And so I would do, if I were you, I would do as much research as possible about what that dairy farm was and what it meant to the community, because there have been, I mean, especially in New England, like, dairy farms have just been wrecked and just savaged. Like, Vermont, the dairy industry has just been totally gutted over the last 10 years, and same in Maine as well. And so I think that, like, having some of that knowledge and figuring out what you do with it, that there's something really magic there beyond all the repairs.
Right. To balance out the frustration, I've been trying to challenge like my Western mind to what I would call like re-indigenize in some way, to like the way my ancestors once lived at a slower pace, and also like to have a long game legacy view of the way I live instead of like a extractive, like sort of quick fix mentality. And that's actually easier said than done. But this house and this farm that we're not even on yet, we're in relationship with. And I feel that relationship like working me in a way that I've been asking for so much of my life, ever since I like climbed to the top of the ladder and I realized it was leaning against the wrong wall. Like I did all the things of life and I was like, wait, this really isn't it. And so I believe what I've been asking for is like a different way. And so, yeah, it involves like dealing with asbestos and finding us, you know, a sink in a wall. We found a sink in a wall, which was so funny. But also we found out that like the dairy farmers who lived there, they were partners, male partners, and the community loved them and protected them in a time when like homophobia was like a big thing in the United States. And one of them played the pipe organ and had a pipe organ built into the house. And I'm like, which room was the pipe organ in? And those sorts of things are like the story of the home and the soul of the home. And I'm down for that. And I'm down to like weave my story into the soul of that home for my child and for whoever I impact. And I'm asking for that in my life. And I also know it's like gonna be challenging, but I'm obsessed. So I think I'm in.
I mean, I will say my first 2 or 3 years, granted, this wasn't something that was planned for me. It was 5 months, you know, 5 months long distance with someone that I loved deeply and knew I wanted to spend my life with that made me move. But, and you've been planning this for 5 years. The first couple of years are hard. Like you will go through periods of missing your old life, of missing just silly things. Like I missed like going out to brunch with my girlfriends, you know, and just like the ocean. I missed the ocean so much, the Pacific Ocean. I mean, we're close to the Atlantic Ocean here, but the Pacific Ocean, I missed it so much. And I missed California because that's where I'm from. And I think wherever you're from, like it will forever feel like home. So you will go through a period of mourning for those things, but you will grow in profound ways. And that's what has happened to me. I can't even imagine who I would be if I would have stayed where I was. And that's incredible. You know, like I've been given this opportunity to grow and to change and to tap in closer to who I am. And having time and space allows you to do that. And being close to nature allows you to do that.
Alyssa Hessler, thank you so much for joining me. I know it's like evening over there. You've got family to feed. I just so appreciate you taking the time to chat with us, share this wisdom. It's very personally, very gratifying to me to get this advice and to just remind myself when things get hard that that's okay. And thank you for your podcast, Urban Exodus, and all the stories that you share on that website. I also like became a member because I was like, oh, I need more and more and more. So thank you for all the work you've put into that. It's really, you know, supporting people like me who are on that path. And I'm wondering if there's anything in particular you want to point people to. Is it the podcast or is it anything you want to share?
I mean, I would say tune into the podcast first. If it resonates with you, or if you're thinking about making a move, or if you're feeling like the trajectory that you're on isn't speaking to you, but you don't really maybe have the support around you that is telling you how to get or manifest what you're trying to envision in your mind, like you could check out the podcast. You definitely find a lot of stories there. Urban Exodus community, that's where I've put all of the stories. So yeah, there are like over 200 stories and they're photo stories, but they also have interviews where I kind of dive into some of the more in-depth questions about how to make that transition and the difficulties that they faced and how they planned for it. I also have like a little mini podcast that's part of our premium subscription that's called Ditch the City. And we specifically typically talk on topics that are related to making shifts, like how do you weather the winter? Like, how do you meet your neighbors? All of these, how do you find a mate? How do you go navigate a divorce? Like all of these things that you might not even think about with rural living that might be helpful to people. And yeah, and then I wrote a book. It's called Ditch the City, Go Country. And people have said that that's helpful. I would say that it's like very much an abridged soup to nuts version of anybody that feels like they're very much a city person and this is uncharted territory for them. It goes from like planting food, making your move, what you should really consider when you're house hunting, all the things that you should think about when you are trying to choose a location, how you build community, how you make the most of all the seasons, how you survive natural disasters. It's like really very broad, but people have found that helpful. So that's available wherever you buy books. And yeah, that's about it.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll link all of that in the show notes at belongingpodcast.com. If you're like, oh, I'm interested in that book, we've got the link for you. So Alyssa, thank you again so much for being with us and sharing everything.
Thanks so much for having me, Becca.
Thank you so much for joining me. In a time when our attention is being pulled in so many different directions, it means a lot that you took time out of your day to spend it with me and in these important conversations. For show notes and links and more information about my guests, you can head to belongingpodcast.com. And if you'd like to hear more from me and get access to my free newsletter called Slow and Seasonal, you can head to beccapiastrelli.com/subscribe.